of my favorite books, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen Covey. He calls them private victories. It's the things that you do day in, day out, nobody's watching. It's the private victories that you do that nobody else knows about that forge your character, forge your personality, forge your perseverance. And that's where self-confidence stems from, I believe.
Welcome to the Superhuman Life. I'm your host, Frank Rich, and this is the only podcast in the world dedicated to helping men break free from the shackles of addiction through the power of faith and fitness. It is our goal with every episode to help you take back control and rebuild your body, mind, and spirit. And we do so by bringing you real and raw conversations with people just like you, aiming to find their place in this world while dealing with the everyday struggles and battles that we all face. Now, it is my belief that we were all created for a specific purpose. And if we can harness that belief or faith, then take control of our mind and body or fitness, then we can ultimately create the life that we've always dreamed about, our own superhuman life. I want to let you know how grateful and blessed I am to have you here with me today. Let's get on to today's show. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another amazing and awesome, very exciting episode of The Superhuman Life. As always, I am your host, Frank Rich. And guys, if you can't tell, I'm really, really excited about today's conversation. You'll hear the giddiness in me when I first get started talking with our guests here today. But those of you that have been around for a while, you know there's a couple things in this world that I'm uber, uber passionate about. Obviously, helping, serving others sits at the top of that list. Faith, fitness, my background in bodybuilding, and that was a big part of my life for close to a decade. But prior to that, and many of you know my story, you know my life story. I've shared it over the course of these 80 plus episodes that we recorded up to this point. But one thing for me, going all the way back to, you know, my childhood and teenage years, and even my early 20s, and you know, when I started my first business at 30 years old, one thing that has always been a passion of mine has been entrepreneurship, has been business building, has been getting into the minds of business leaders, some of the greatest, you know, entrepreneurs, some of the most successful people in the world. I mean, that's outside of this podcast and the coaching and building Rebuilt Recovery. Outside of all that, I would really say entrepreneurship, building businesses is one of the biggest passions that I have into the world. So I'm so fired up for this conversation. Because I'm talking with an individual that has taken a childhood side hustle, a childhood chore for many of us, and he built it into a 8-figure business. And we're talking about cutting grass. You guys know I shared this story when I was 12, 13 years old, pushed my dad's lawnmower around the neighborhood, knocking on doors so that I could make 20, 30 bucks, whatever the case. And that was big for me. Back then, I mean, anytime I wanted something big and beyond, what we were able to get as far as like bare essentials, anytime I wanted something big, whether it was, you know, super expensive pair of shoes, I was big into Jordans as a young kid, or a jersey, specific jersey, which you guys will hear about a little bit later in this conversation. My path to getting that was by cutting grass. And my guest today took that same passion, took that same drive as a 14, 15 year old kid, and really built an empire around it, generating $10+ million with his first landscaping business. And now he's got a company servicing the same industry doing $20 million a year. So this conversation is going to be unpacking that story, talking about the, you know, some of the disciplines and rules of entrepreneurship, building and selling and exiting a company. Because, you know, maybe some of you aren't business owners. Maybe some of our early startup entrepreneurs. What's it like to build a company and exit from it, you know, actually build a business that can then be sold to a larger corporation. So super insightful there as well. We get into strategies and tactics. What are some of the best books for business leaders? How to build self-confidence. So my guest today is Brian Clayton. Brian Clayton is the CEO and co-founder of GreenPal, which is an online marketplace that connects homeowners with local lawn care professionals. This is his current business. GreenPal has been called the Uber for lawn care by Entrepreneur Magazines. It has over 200,000 active users completing thousands of transactions per day. Now, prior to starting GreenPal, Brian founded Peachtree Inc., which at the time was one of the largest landscaping companies in the state of Tennessee. Like I said, growing it over $10 million a year in annual revenue before he exited and the company was acquired by Lusa Holdings in 2013. So like I said, guys, we want to unpack a little bit about how Brian went, you know, from pushing a lawnmower in his teenage years to building a company, doing over $10 million, 150 plus employees. And then what sparked him, you know, retiring at in his early 30s, million dollar net worth. What inspired him? What led him to decide to start a tech company? You know, he had it made. He had all the money in the world. He could have lived this free life for the rest. So really getting into the mind of the entrepreneur, really getting mind into building businesses, building empires, constantly having to grow and become that next version of yourself. And that's, you know, what we're all about here at the Superhuman Life, is helping you step into the life that you were created to live. And it's an ever going, ongoing process that we will continue to grow, continue to evolve the remainder of our lives. So super excited for you guys to hear this conversation. So without further ado, guys, let's get into today's conversation with CEO and founder of Green Pal Inc., Brian Clayton. Hope you guys enjoy.
Brian, my brother, welcome to the Superhuman Life.
Frank, thanks for having me on, man. Great to be here.
Absolutely, man. I'm a little childish giddy about this conversation. And let me explain why. I've talked about kind of my, you know, my journey to entrepreneurship here on the show. And like so many, you're 40, 41 right now, 40, correct?
41, yep.
Mm-hmm. 41, yeah. So I'm 37. So I mean, we're technically probably, you know, right around the same age. But I think so many, you know, young boys and men that kind of grew up in our generation, their first job, or, you know, call it a venture, or, you know, kind of stab into entrepreneurship, was that pushing the lawnmower. You know, I've shared this, you know, dozens of times on the show, how I actually brought it out. I've worn this on a couple podcasts, but I bought this Michael Jordan jersey when I was, I believe it was, the year was 1997. So I was 13 or 14 years old. And I don't know if you could see it, but it is the official. I mean, it's the official logo. It's from the year that they had the 50th anniversary, where they recognized the top 50 players in the NBA. And the reason why I brought that out is I've shared the story here. I grew up, I would say, probably, you know, middle class, maybe lower to middle class. Like we always had enough, you know, we never went without. But anything above and beyond kind of the bare necessities, like, it was kind of on us. And I caught the bug very early on, realizing, like, with just a lawnmower and a weed eater, like, you could go out and generate as much money as you potentially wanted to. I mean, I had probably 2 to 5 kind of, you know, ongoing clients, a guy across the street, Kevin, I'm, you know, mowed a couple yards down the road. But if I ever wanted something big, this, you know, this jersey sent me back about $300 back then. If I ever wanted something big, I know in a weekend's time, I could load the mower up and knock on doors and just make it happen. And you, I know your story is very similar. You started this business in the landscaping very, very young. But what I want to do, Brian, is I kind of want to go through the story of you really building your first company. I want to get into Green Pal and what you're doing with the Uber of lawn care and some of the stuff today. But selfishly for me, I really want to talk about the story of you, you know, getting started and then building it to 10 plus million and then the exit side of things. Just because I've always been fascinated with the landscaping and lawn care business. So, Brian, to kind of kick it off, man, why don't you kind of just tell us a little bit about how you kind of got into, you know, the landscaping business, you know, back when you were in your teenage years?
Yeah, very similar story to what you're talking about. For me, it wasn't an MJ jersey. It was a pair of soccer cleats that I wanted. So, you know, my parents would buy me some soccer cleats, but they wouldn't buy me the good ones. And I wanted a pair of $90 soccer cleats. And back in like the mid 90s, that was just out of reach. Like you could get the $30 ones, but you're not getting the $100 ones. And so, you know, after like, you know, asking my folks over and over and over again, my dad finally came into my room one day and he said, "Hey, get off your ass. I got a job lined up for you. You're going to go mow the neighbor's yard." And luckily we weren't living in a democracy. And so he made me go cut the neighbor's grass. And thank God he did, because after that, I made like $20 for an hour's work. And I thought, man, this is awesome. If I just do this like 5 more times, I can get the cleats I wanted. And that's exactly what I did. I got done. I got paid. And the first thing I did, I went to my old school computer and on Microsoft Works at the time and like made up some flyers and passed them around the neighborhood. And I had like 10, 15 customers that first summer. And I got bit by the entrepreneurial bug particularly in the lawn mowing industry. And it stuck with that business. And something about, you know, just always having, you know, the ability to chart my own way through life, you know, make as much money as I wanted to make, not ever have to like be without, just really stuck, you know, stuck with me. And I mowed grass all through high school, all through college, put myself through college mowing yards. Took me 7 years to get through school because I went nights and weekends, and I would show up to like, I would show up to night school with like grass all over me and smelling like gasoline and stuff. But just stuck with it. And after I graduated business school, I made like a real business plan, and over a 15-year period of time, grew that to like one of the largest landscaping companies in the state of Tennessee, over 150 employees, over $10 million a year in revenue. And in 2013, I was able to navigate the acquisition of that business. So going from just me and a push mower to me and 150 people, I learned a lot the hard way about how to get a business going. And also that can be like the best thing you can do with your life. And a lot of people don't stick with the lawn mowing business, but it's a great business to kind of cut your teeth on entrepreneurship.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And I'm sure you witnessed this, you know, as an outsider. I mean, I'm for some reason, like I'm so connected to that entrepreneurship journey as a young kid. But then, you know, I got out of it. I didn't stick with it, obviously, like you did. You know, I got into sales in my early 20s, and I always kept an eye on it. And it was probably, you know, in my early 20s when I saw this shift. And you must have experienced this being involved in it. It shifted from, you know, the kids kind of doing it, the side hustle, to one day I realized, like, wow, this is a real industry. You start seeing trucks with logos and everything. So what was that like for you? When did that kind of, you know, switch in your head kind of happen, when it went from, hey, this is a side thing for me, you know, high school, pay to college, and then it became a real business? What was that kind of switch like for you? And when
did
that happen?
Very good point. That does happen, you know, and so for, I think if you're doing any business right, you should be evolving with the business every 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And so very much so in the early days, you're right. It was like, I need to make an extra $100, or I want to just be able to make $1,000 a week. And that was what the motivation was. And then as time went on, I'm in business school, and it's not that I learned a ton in business school, but I was learning enough to kind of open my eyes to possibilities. And to your point, you know, I was lucky enough to be a part of a growing community outside of Nashville, Tennessee, where there was new development going on and there was prosperity. And part of that, you know, is small businesses are winning. And in my industry, in the landscaping industry, small businesses were growing. And so I started kind of taking notice that, wow, you know, like these guys who just for 5 years ago, were chucking a truck. Now he's got 10 trucks out there. I can do that. He doesn't know anything I don't know. I can definitely do that. So I kind of, admittedly, it developed a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. Like, I just wanted to have the biggest, most successful, most profitable, most visible landscaping business in my market. And I just really just for some reason wanted to prove I could do it. And I think business can be like your vehicle to like help you make something of your life. It certainly has been for me. You know, no telling how my life would be different had I not stuck it out. And so that's what got me through those like first 3, 4, 5 years. And then after that, like if you're continuing to evolve, you start to realize, wow, this business is not just about me. Now I've got 10 employees or 20 employees or 30 or 50. All the way up to over 100. And then you start to realize, wow, this is bigger than me. And so the business kind of causes you to evolve, causes you to grow as a human being, causes you to be wiser, smarter, more humble. And it forces you to do that. The marketplace is a relentless feedback machine. And if you're not evolving with the business, you're not growing, you're probably not going to be successful in it. And that's one of the things I love about it. You know, I'm like the hardest working, laziest person you'll ever meet. And so it's like I have to have those forcing functions in my life to continue to move up and progress. And the businesses, whatever business I'm working on, you know, even Green Pal, like what I'm working on today, has been the thing that causes me to level up. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, I forget where I heard it, but it somewhere along the lines, I've heard like entrepreneurship is, you know, the most successful, you know, personal development course that you can get into. Like you want to really learn who you are. You want to really be forced to grow and level up, kind of, you know, using your terminology here, like start a business, because in the early stages, like you're going to have to navigate, you're going to have to grow. It's going to involve books and whatnot. Was entrepreneurship something like in the home? Was this something that you got from your parents? Where did this kind of knack for entrepreneurship and building businesses come from? Was this passed down through your parents, or was it just something kind of innate inside of you?
Great question. So a first generation entrepreneur, you know, it, for me, like my mom was a school teacher. My dad, was a leader in manufacturing. And so it's like nobody in my family had ever started a business. So this was not like, part of like my DNA. In fact, I was kind of going counter to that. It was seen as risky. And you know, in the '90s and even probably up to 2008, if you put entrepreneur on your like business card, you were a loser. Like that was like code for loser. Hey, it was entrepreneurship only just recently got sexy in the last maybe decade or 15 years. So it's like, it wasn't like a clear defined option to pour your life's energy into. But luckily, you know, a couple things happened. I got exposed to it early on, and I realized I could work as hard as I wanted to and get the things I wanted out of life. And then when you're running that type of service-based business, a lot of times you're exposed to different people in terms of clientele that you may not have otherwise met. And so like I had a lot of rich people that I worked for, and I could watch them and look at what they were doing and observe how they were like making money and putting money to work and how they thought. And a lot of them were business owners. I remember one guy who I worked for was just filthy rich. And like he owned an insurance business, and I'm sitting here like talking to this guy, great guy, but he's not even more smarter than I am. So it's like this stuff exposes you, like working for like a wealthy clientele exposes you to possibilities. So that was part of it too. And then the other part of it is like you're working in the higher end parts of town, you know, the big houses, the swimming pools, you know, you're sitting there mowing the yard while they're laying out by the pool, and you're like, you know, that's going to be me one day. And so, And I actually did that. I set a goal that, you know, the clientele I was serving and the yards I was mowing in the wealthy parts of town, at 20 years old, I said, by 30 years old, I'm going to live in this neighborhood. And I did it by 29. And so just seeing that, being around it, you're in the business, you're exposed to a level of people that are executing at a high degree. It's all good stuff. And that's kind of how it helped me with my journey, how my life unfolded.
No, I absolutely love that. And it's something, you know, through the coaching work that I do and really, you know, selfishly, like what this podcast has been for me is I get to connect with, you know, individuals like yourself. And I mean, many of the other greats, you know, we're 80 plus episodes in now. And I mean, I've had, you know, 8-figure earners, you know, CEOs of Dave Asprey, I'm the CEO of Bulletproof Coffee. I mean, and then in, you know, my day life, like, you know, I'm connected in multiple masterminds. And what I get out of these is that proximity, like when you're around these individuals, just like you said, you see that the guy that's doing 10 million a year is no smarter than you. Like he's just found a niche or, you know, a work ethic or so with that, what do you think, you know, if it's 1, 2, 3 kind of things that separates the uber successful, you know, the people, you know, maybe it was the first lessons you've learned from some of these people or kind of even in your own journey, like what have been kind of the traits or, you know, characteristics that you've had to develop to take you to that, you know, 8-figure plus a year?
Couple things. So entrepreneurship's full of these like dichotomies, like these things that don't necessarily go together. And it's hard because it's like, you know, you one of them that I struggle with is like you got to have this huge ambitious goal. You have to like have this big outstretched outsized goal that you want to like work towards, but you also have to think and act very, very small. So it's like it's execution at a very small level over and over and over and over again that begins to compound over time, but you also have this huge goal. And that's one thing I've noticed about like successful like moments in my life, because you know, I mean, I have ups and downs, and the successful people I've observed, they have a bias towards action. Like they don't sit there and just look at the real estate deal for a year and toil over and analyze it. They just do it and figure it out as they go, or whatever it is. It's like they have a bias towards action. They get in there and they just figure it out and they get stuff done. And they also like they leverage, but they don't leap. So it's like they take risks, but calculated risks, and they understand that, you know, nothing worth having doesn't involve a degree of risk. And so I've been guilty of this in my life is looking at things as too risky when in fact, like, you try to make a, like, a decision, like high upside, low downside, and just make, like, you leverage what you have, but you don't risk it all. You don't leap. And so it's like, I've seen that with successful people, and I try to emulate that in my life. And it's consistency. I think that's the superpower. Like, it's consistency day in, day out for years, 5 years, a decade, 15 years. Rarely do you ever see an overnight success. And a lot of times, seemingly, when it is an overnight success, you got to peel away the layers of the story, and it's just not. You know, in my world, in the tech world, building GreenPal, you know, for the last 8 years, you see these companies that seem to come out of nowhere, and they're raising, you know, $100 million or selling for $1 billion. And it's like, man, you know, I mean, I just heard of that company 2 years ago. And then you really start looking at it, and it's like, no, that founder had two or three other failures before that. They've been working on this project under a different name for like 5 years, and then they rebranded to this thing you saw in the tech press. So really, it's not 4 years. It's you're looking at like 15 years. That's usually always the case. So it's taking the long haul approach, but also executing at a small level day in, day out over a long period of time is what's worked for me, is what I've seen work for most every successful person I know.
Yeah. Where do you find your self-confidence? Like, where's this, you know, belief like grounded in? You know, you talked about, you know, you gotta have this, you know, ability to take quick action. You know, you don't look at the deal and analyze it. Like, you just go in, and you gotta have, and in doing that, you gotta though have the faith or confidence in yourself that if I begin this, I'm gonna figure it out along the way. You know, I can share, for me, you know, I have a background in bodybuilding, and for me, a lot of my confidence is built in doing the hard things every single day. You know, just this morning, I was, you know, up at 4:30, in the cold shower, in the gym by 4:55. I got an hour long workout in, took the dog for a walk, sauna, cold shower, at my desk by 7:15 working. But in those first 2 hours of the day, I mean, I've cold shower, trained, hot exposure. I mean, and in doing that, like, I've exposed myself to multiple hard things that most people won't do on a daily basis. I've done it all before 7 a.m. That's where a lot of my self-confidence is I'm willing to expose myself and do difficult things. So for you, where do you find your self-confidence or the belief in yourself that if I get going, I'll figure it out along the way?
Yeah, that's exactly what you just said. You nailed it. One of my favorite books, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen Covey, he calls them private victories. And so it's the things that you do day in, day out. Nobody's watching. You're not broadcasting it on social media. You're not virtue signaling. It's the private victories that you do that nobody else knows about that forge your character, forge your personality, forge your perseverance. And that's where self-confidence stems from, I believe. And it's doing hard stuff. You know, it's like going, like, you're drawn towards that which scares you. And if you, like, for me, like, I know if I'm afraid to do something or scared to do something, that's usually an indicator that I'm in the right zone. And I'm not saying just shoot from the hip all the time and just like be wild about it. But I am saying, like, listen to that voice in your head that's telling you, no, I don't want to do that. I'm scared to do that. And like letting that be a signal that you're in the right place. And then the consistency and in doing the things day in, day out that nobody else knows about, that you know are building up, that's where you can just stand there like stoically and look somebody dead in the eye and say, no, you're full of shit. I actually, it's this because I've done it for the last 5 years, you know? And it's like, it's, there's just no way to shortcut that stuff. You know, and it's not fun. It's just not fun. Like, I mean, maybe you can enjoy the process, but I mean, all of this stuff, it just takes the discipline. And like one of my favorite quotes is a Mark Twain quote. And he says, I hate writing, but I love having written. If Mark Twain hated to write, it's okay for you to hate to get out of bed at 4:30 in the morning and hit the gym. It's okay. But you know, you got to do it. And that's where the self-confidence comes from, I believe. And, you know, I've gone through ups and downs over 22 years of business ownership and personal growth, struggling with this stuff and trying to figure it out for myself.
Yeah. So with that, I mean, you said, you know, entrepreneurship wasn't that, you know, wasn't passed down to you, you know, through genetics. Like you've had to acquire a lot of this. I mean, so do you feel everybody has the ability to become an entrepreneur? I mean, you know, you said it right there. Like you have to be willing to do difficult stuff. You have to be willing to work a long time, you know, without any, you know, any reward or any guarantee of reward. So you got to have confidence, but you got to have discipline and worth ethic. I mean, do you feel that's something that everybody can do? Or if somebody's hearing this right now and they're like, man, I'm at my job right now, but I have this dream or goal. Like, can I actually do it? What's self-analysis questions that people can ask themselves to determine if they have it to become an entrepreneur? Or how would you just talk to, if somebody's contemplating becoming an entrepreneur, like, can anybody do it? Or does it take a certain type of individual?
On the one hand, because I'm not a terribly smart dude, I've just worked really hard for 2 decades and I've built 2 8-figure businesses. And, you know, I retired at 32, didn't have to work anymore, and got back in the game and built GreenPal. And so it's like, I know if I can do it, anybody can do it, is my point. So on the one hand, I answer that question, say, yes, anybody can do it. But on the other hand, man, it's really, really, really tough. And so some smarter, more successful people, what they say about this question is like Sean Parker, the guy who founded Napster, who was the first CEO of Facebook. He says, entrepreneurship is like eating glass, and eventually you like the taste of your own blood. That's a very adequate description of the first couple years of getting a business going, and that's very real. And then Mark Cuban says, you know, if you have to ask that question, should I do it? Then the answer is no, because if you are an entrepreneur, you can't not do it. It's like nights and weekends, you're grinding on it. From the first moment you, like, the shower water hits your face, you're thinking about it. You're brushing your teeth, you're thinking about it. Your head's on the pillow, you're thinking about it. Nothing's going to stop you from getting started. So those are kind of like, those guys, I think, have earned the right to give that really candid feedback. I'm not successful enough just to tell somebody they can't start their own business, but I quote those guys, and then I'll, but I believe if I can do it, anybody can do it. So somewhere in the middle, I think, might be the correct answer.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. I shared this on our last episode. You know, in my late 20s, my 28, 29, you know, I was an executive in a corporate recruiting firm, very well paid, you know, very well compensated, had a corner office. Like, I just had the cush, you know, the dream, you know, living the dream, so to speak. Like, I it was set. It, even in that time, it's like, I just was thinking about other businesses and doing my own thing. And I realized at that point, you couldn't pay me. There's no amount of money that you could pay me to make me an employee. I don't want to say I'm not employable, but I've always had, you know, maybe bigger dreams or aspirations or the desire to do stuff on my own. Like, I see a problem and I'm like, I can figure out a better solution. So I agree 100%. Like, if you got to ask that question, should I do it? Then no, it's probably not the right case for you.
You should have that bias. You should have that bias. You should just automatically want to do it. And the other point I'll make is, it's like, as you're doing it, as you're getting into the game, the concept of like work-life balance and all of this, I mean, to me, like, it's going to be 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week working on the thing, the business, the side hustle, the product, whatever it is. And then you need another 30, 40 hours a week to learn. Like, if you're going to try to get in business, your living room must become a classroom. Your car must become a mobile classroom. There are not enough hours in the week for you to learn the things you're going to have to learn to execute, to do whatever the hell it is you're trying to do. And that's one thing I think gets skipped over is a lot. You're going to have to turn off Netflix. You're going to have to turn off Amazon Prime. You're going to have to turn on YouTube University. And it's just like, it doesn't matter what the heck it is you're trying to do. Let's say you mentioned bulletproof coffee earlier. Maybe you want to like invent or market a new coffee brand. You need to be watching every conference about like direct to consumer products. And you need to be watching every person that's talking about that stuff, and how to market that stuff and how to brand that stuff. And all of that stuff is right there at your fingertips. And what a great time to be alive and try to start a business, because now we can like learn from others so much easier than we could, you know, back in the day when I was starting my first business. This stuff was like not available. Now it is, and there's no excuse. So if you're sufficiently motivated to do it, you can do it. The knowledge is out there.
No, absolutely. And I mean, we're living in a time right now with, you know, call it this free time where we have, you know, washing the dishes, doing house chores, driving. No longer you need music to be entertained. It's like, obviously, here at podcasts, you know, listen to this podcast, listen to other ones, listen to audiobooks, et cetera, but you will not very, very rarely. I mean, I take one afternoon walk every single day, no phone, no headphones. But outside of that, every time I'm outside walking or in the car, it's not music, it's podcasts, books, et cetera, because I mean, you look behind me, I'm a student of knowledge. I want to get to the exit and then kind of retiring at 32 and kind of what that was like. But real quick, when was the point where you kind of had this, oh shit moment, like I'm making real money? You know what I mean? Like no longer is it the extra $1,000 or enough to pay tuition. It's like you had this point, and maybe it wasn't a single defining point, but when in that 15 year journey was it like, oh shit, this is like a real thing and there's real money to be made here?
You know, it's like when you're starting a business, a lot of time, you know, particularly an asset intense business like that, for me, I was taking every dime and I was plowing it back into the company. And so it was like 8-9 years in before I really got to personally benefit from it, maybe even a decade in, because I was buying trucks, I was buying lawnmowers, I was hiring new people. There were times when I was hiring like executives and salespeople and they'd make more money than I would. But I knew like the long bet was if I could figure out how to bring them in, develop a sales process. So it was very much like the long game, taking every dime that the business made and reinvest it back into the business. But maybe year 11, 12, when we were doing, you know, $5-6 million a year in revenue and I could pay myself a good salary and I was able to move into that neighborhood that I was cutting grass in, and the neighbors hated me. I was 29 years old. And I was doing parties and stuff. I bought a Ferrari, like, and I was a total douche. And so like everybody tells you this, that you have to like acquire these things before you realize they're not really that important. I went through that and lived that lifestyle for like maybe 2 or 3 years. After I sold that business, I sold all that stuff. I had like a 8-9,000 square foot house and I sold all of that. And now I live in a little 800 square foot studio. And you know, it's like, you have to acquire all that material stuff to realize it's not important. But it was probably like year 9-10, a decade of running that business before I could like personally get the fruits from it. And then I realized, wow, this really doesn't drive me. Like, yeah, it's cool, but I mean, it's about as fun. It's cool for a month, maybe two, and then you realize, wow, no, this is not that important. I went through that. That was an evolution of myself, and the business caused it, which is really neat looking back.
Yeah, that's incredible, and I think there's an incredibly valuable lesson to be learned there, though. I mean, you're 11 years in. You're running multiple seven figures already, and like you said, employees are making more than you. I think so many people think like, I'm going to get into this entrepreneurship, I'm going to get into this starting a business, and then by the end of the first year, like, I'm going to have it made, like I'm going to be set. And you know, if you're really building a company, if you're, you know, for you, you built a company that you exited from, which is a, you know, what I want to get into to now. But most people don't realize, like, you're going to have to pay other people first. You have to invest into the business. Like, it may be 5-10, you know, plus years till you see those fruits. So I think there's a very, very valuable lesson to extract there.
So I agree. Like, 5 years from now, you will arrive. It's just a matter of where. And you might as well arrive with some kind of like asset, some kind of business that you've built from scratch. Yeah, it might suck for 5 years, but the time is gonna pass. You might as well spend it working something that you can like breathe life into and be proud of, and is prosperous, and is helping employees, and is helping, you know, it's helping you get further in life, and rather than this, you know, sitting in a cubicle somewhere. That's the way I look at it. But you know, when I sold the business, you know, I arrived at the decision to sell the business very like rapidly, when I realized that like my personal growth had plateaued, and that was the thing that I was getting out of the business was I was accomplishing things that were outside of my skill sets, and that it was causing me to do things that I wasn't necessarily like equipped to do. But after I kind of plateaued as far as that stuff was concerned, it's not like I conquered the world, but I'd kind of like grown it to as much as I wanted to grow it. And I thought, well, you know, maybe it's time to do something else with my life. And from the moment I made that decision to like the moment I was able to get the business sold was a little over 2 years. So that was a really, really challenging thing to do, to get that business acquired. Ideally, you work like an exit plan and you say, okay, 5 years from today, I'm going to attempt to sell this business. And then you work backwards. And there's a book called Built to Sell, which is a really good book, that if I had had that in, you know, when I thought about selling the company, it would have really helped me kind of execute a little more methodically. But yeah, so selling the business was really tough, and it was tough to execute. It was tough to get it done. It was tough emotionally because for 15 years I'm running this company. A lot of my personal identity was wrapped up in it, and it was a growth period for me. And after I sold it, I retired, and I realized there's only so many beaches you can lay on. And I thought, well, it's okay. I really don't want to start another business, but I think that's what I need to do to lend purpose to my life. And I recruited two co-founders, and the idea for Green Pal, which is the Uber of lawn mowing, was a clear one for me because I'd kind of seen the inefficiencies in the marketplace for over a decade, saw what Uber and Airbnb and Lyft were doing. I thought, you know what? I can do that. And luckily, I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know how hard it was going to be, or else I never would have done it. But recruited two co-founders, and we went to work. And here we are 8 years in. We're an 8-year overnight success.
Yeah, let's So Green Pal, Uber, let's pivot here and get into, you know, the stuff that you're doing here today. You know, I've done my research. I understand what you guys do here. But can you, you know, explain what Green Pal is, who you service, what it's for? I mean, when we hear Uber of Green Pal, does that mean I hit a button, a car picks me up and drives me to Home Depot and I buy a lawnmower and I bring it home? You know, is that how it works? Or yeah, just what is Green Pal? Who's it for? How does it work?
Yeah. So Green Pal is the easiest way in the world to get your lawn mowed. So if you're a homeowner, you need to get your grass cut, rather than calling around on Craigslist or Yelp or Facebook or however people normally get the stuff done, you just download Green Pal, you pop your address in, you'll get 4 or 5 quotes back from lawn care services nearby you. Hire the one you want to work with. You read reviews, you know, you check out their pricing, and then they come and show up the same day or the next day, mow the yard for you, and you get a picture of it, like on your phone, when it's done, and then you just pay them right through the app. And if you liked how everything went, you just book them for the whole season right through the app, and everything just happens like clockwork. If you didn't like who you hired, you can just take another spin for quotes, hire a different guy, and then set it and forget it. You don't have to like worry about this chore anymore. And so we've been at this for almost 9 years now. A few hundred thousand people using the app on a regular basis to get their grass cut, powering over $20 million a year in lawn mowing services. And this has been the first business was hard. This thing's been 10 times harder. So it's like, I thought here, when I sold my first company, my landscaping business, it was like organized chaos every day running that company. And I thought, damn, that was hard. I don't want to do that again. I want to start an easy business. I'm going to start a software business. And boy, I didn't know what I didn't know. A lot harder.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about that, you know, that kind of internal dialogue here. I, so many people, you briefly mentioned it here, you know, retired at 32, you know, probably financially would assume at this point, maybe, you know, you couldn't live, you know, the rock star lifestyle, but I'm sure you're probably set had you made some good decisions with the money that you walked away with. So there was no need to work. I think that's, you know, most people are like, well, you got it made, dude, like in your 30s, like set financially, like why go back? Like why decide to start something else? Just talk more about that process if you can, because I know so many people are going to be like, dude, if I sell my company and I got multiple millions in the bank, like I'm just going to chill. But I know that's not, you know, from the people that I know that are uber successful and obviously, you know, hearing your story as well. So yeah, what was that kind of conversation like going on in internally there?
Yeah, you nailed it. Like I wasn't private jet money, but I had enough to where I didn't have to work anymore. And I purposely took my proceeds from the business and locked it down in highly illiquid, safe assets and investments, because I knew I never wanted to pick up another weed eater again in my entire life. No matter what, I never had to mow another yard. And I hated the smell of cut grass. And so I didn't want to ever go backwards, is my point. And so I did that on purpose. I locked everything down and then started, you know, and then took some time off, traveled a little bit. And quite frankly, got bored and realized that my business is the thing that causes me to have purpose and meaning in my life. And now that was gone. And it kind of hit me like, you know, I was on the beach in Costa Rica and the only problem I had faced that week was the bar ran out of my favorite type of tequila. And I'm like, holy man, like I'm wired to deal with bigger challenges than this in life. I can do more with my life. And so I think the advice of like, follow your passion and you'll never work a day in your life, I think that might be a little misguided. I think Because a lot of times you can't make money on your passion. Sometimes you can, but most time, I mean, I never have been able to. But I think replace passion with purpose. And so the business is the purpose of your life. The business is like the reason you're getting out of bed in the morning, the reason you're staying sharp, the reason you're reading books, the reason you're listening to podcasts and stuff on YouTube. And the purpose of the business is for you to level up and for you to achieve and do things you never would have done. One of my favorite books that I've recently read is an author named Donald Miller, and the book is called 1,000 Miles in a Million Years. And this is a book about like his story of his life. And he talks about in the book, the main point of the book is to live an interesting life, you have to live an interesting story. And if you're just doing boring things day in, day out, you're not challenging yourself and you're not doing interesting things, then you're probably going to have a pretty boring life. Well, I'm reading this book, I'm like, damn, that makes sense. And then it hits me like the business is the thing that lends an interesting storyline to my life. It's the thing that's causing me to get out of bed. It's the thing that's causing me to like be challenged and doing things I never would do. And if you watch any movie, any good movie, like the main character is going through ups and downs, highs and lows. That's what makes it interesting. And the business is going to cause you to go through a similar storyline. And if you look at it kind of like that, it kind of takes care of a lot of the low parts that you're going to go through.
Is that Donald Miller from StoryBrand?
That's right. Yeah. StoryBrand is like flagship, which is a great book for marketing, but this is more like a novel that follows his life. And it's just a very like humble, pragmatic story about this dude's life and how we can all relate to it. And it's really good. And it's a short read. I recommend everybody check it out. It'll help you kind of maybe think about things a little different.
Yeah, no, that's great. We'll definitely link that. I mean, we've had multiple books here, Built to Sell, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So as always, guys, we'll link all those books down in the show notes and description box below. And I think, you know, just, you know, through our conversation, like what you've shared here, like you've had to, you know, every few years you've had to level up, you've had to become, you know, you had to become the guy that could exit from a business. And once you become that guy, you can't then go back to the beginning. And I think this is where maybe people don't realize, like they can say now if they never started a business or never made $1 million, oh yeah, when I get that $1 million, like I'm just going to chill. But it's so many people talk about this setting goals. Like you don't set the goal to achieve the thing. You set the goal to become the person that can achieve that. And then once you become that person, you then just can't go back to the old way where I'm just chilling on the beach. It's like, now I got to look at the next way for me to level up.
Exactly.
So powerful here.
Jim Rohn, who was like the Tony Robbins before Tony Robbins, that's exactly what he says. He goes, don't go make $1 million to have $1 million. Go make $1 million for what will become of you to make $1 million. That's what you get. And sure, yeah, I mean, like financial independence is great, but like you will evolve. You will become a new person. I'm a totally different person today than I was when I started my current business, GreenPal. And that's really one of the cool things about it.
Yeah. So now you're here, you're in your set, you know, building your second business. I mean, doubled in revenue from the stats that I got. You had done 10 million in the landscaping business. You guys are doing about 20 million a year right now. What would Brian of today go back and tell Brian in the first business, you know, about what you need to do, be prepared? What would that conversation be if you go back and talk to the beginning Brian, early on stages of the landscaping business?
Yeah, you know, having to kind of reinvent myself from a blue-collar entrepreneur to a tech entrepreneur, you know, I've kind of seen the world from different angles. And so now I see things very systemized, from a very systems-driven standpoint. What is the system? How is the system architected? And how does that dictate what happens? Whereas, you know, in the first business, it was very much hand-to-hand combat. It was very much relationship-based. It was very much like, get in there, like figure it out and deal with it over and over again. So if knowing what I know today, if I could like jump in the DeLorean and go back, I would like challenge myself to audit the amount of time I spend on a weekly, monthly basis working in the business, and try to set out more time to work on the business in terms of systems, in terms of like routines, processes, and how I can leverage technology to implement the system. Because that if you really look at the problems you're facing over and over again basis in your business, a lot of times if you would just like really take a step back and develop a process or a system to address it at the root cause, and like ask why five times. Like, why is this customer pissed off? Well, because we left them hanging. Well, why did we leave them hanging? Well, we left them hanging because so-and-so didn't show up on time. Well, why didn't so-and-so show up on time? Well, because there wasn't a process in place for them to let us know if they weren't going to make it. Well, okay, well, now we need to develop a process. You know, like really like asking why five times to figure out the root cause of everything you're dealing with and develop a system and a process to eliminate it almost. You know, if I had thought like that in year one, two, three of building my first company, I probably could have had, you know, double or three times the outcome. But that's okay. You know, it's like you go through levels in entrepreneurship. You learn this stuff as you go. And now I think differently today than I did back then. And that's the cool thing about it.
Should everybody starting a business, every, you know, young entrepreneur, should they go into it with the intent to exit, to sell? You know, I'm in the process now of building I guess what would be my third, you know, my third business, my third company. The first one was a ticket brokerage. We were, you know, very similar to StubHub, Vivid Seats, kind of, you know, small time competitors with them. You know, got that up to, you know, almost 600,000 annually a year. It was a short run. Very immature business owner, very immature financial manager back then. So I made a lot of very, very poor decisions. And then I built Frank Rich Fitness, which, you know, is still actively something that I'm involved in. But I don't ever really see me exiting. A, I'm attached to it. It's the brand. It's my name. I haven't put a lot of systems and processes. But here with Rebuilt Recovery, which is my porn addiction recovery business, I knew from the beginning, like, I'm going in this with the intent to build a foundation, to build processes, systems, educational tools, et cetera, with the intent to exit in 5 to 7 years from now, because it's not something I want to be doing for the rest of my life, but it's something I think that the world is going to need forever. So I'm taking it on me to, okay, be one of the biggest players in this space. So here I'm, third company, now finally only really going into the intent, something I want to exit from. And obviously I've grown and evolved as a person through coaching, mentorship, et cetera, where I'm a much better businessman, much better entrepreneur than I was back in 2013 when I started my first company. But do you think every person going into entrepreneurship or in building a business needs to go into it with the intent or goal to sell or exit? Or can it be something where you just build a business where it produces an income for yourself and maybe a few other people?
You know, I think it almost doesn't matter, but you got to pick one. I think like you need to pick one or the other because I think there's times I've ran my businesses as a lifestyle business and as a, you know, like my personal, like, you know, lifestyle business. It's very different than building a company that can be acquired by a national organization doing hundreds of millions or billions of dollars a year in revenue. So you kind of have to pick. And the things you're going to be doing running like a lifestyle business, something that, you know, maybe you go to Las Vegas and you throw it on the company credit card. I've done that, you know, and it's like, you can't do that if you're thinking about selling a business. Like, you have to run it clean. It has to like stand on its own. It has to sing for its supper. It cannot mix with your personal affairs, your personal dealings. So you kind of have to make that distinction early on. I think it can help. I mean, you can certainly like reverse engineer it and try to like fix all the stuff about your business. And if you want to sell it, that's what I did. Let me tell you, it's not fun. You don't really want to do it that way. And in many ways I got lucky, that I was able to get the company sold. And so I would recommend like managing your personal psychology, understanding what you want, and then making a decision and working a plan backwards. Now, not every business needs to be built to be sold. Like there's people that use our platform, GreenPal, to run their lawn mowing business that make $200,000-$300,000 a year, like take home, and they go buy real estate. You know, like they're like, they have one employee and they're putting like multiple six figures in their pocket, and then they go buy a rental house every year. And I know people that do this. Like I coach them, like just for free as a hobby. Like I mentor them, and because I do some investing in real estate too. So it's like you can be self-employed and run a really profitable small business being self-employed, and then reinvest the proceeds into durable assets and durable sources of income, rinse and repeat, and do that for 10 years. You probably. Will get out ahead over the guy who wanted to sell his business. Maybe, I don't know. My point is, it's like there's not like one path. You can do one or the other, but you can't do both. And so don't like have dreams of selling your company one day, if you're not grooming it for that, you're not like working an exit plan for that, you're not making decisions that are congruent with that outcome, and you're running like a lifestyle business. So they're really kind of two different paths.
So I guess really probably the most important thing then would be self-awareness, like knowing who you are and ultimately what you want. You know, if you want the, you know, couple hundred grand a year, you know, you want maybe the 30-hour week, you know, lifestyle laptop business. You know, there have a lot of people, a lot of friends that, you know, they love to travel the world. You know, they're in, you know, one beach, you know, they're one part of the world one day in Hawaii, and then, you know, 2 months later they're in Bali, and it's, they want to work, you know, Monday through Thursday, 8 hours a day, and then 3 day weekends. And it's, you know, they're very happy with where they're at. So I guess it really probably comes down more than anything, self-awareness of who do I want? And then ultimately, what do I want my life to become? And then once you make that choice, then build the plan and then just execute upon that, small little things every single day, consistency, the kind of stuff that we were sharing back at the beginning.
I agree. And like, it's almost like one is not better than the other, but you got to pick. You got to pick, because if you want to live in Bali or Thailand, and you want to make an extra 10 grand a month, that's cool. That's what a great life. But it's going to be hard to build a $5 or $10 million business doing that, that can be acquired. So it's okay. Just pick it, make a plan, work the plan, but they're not all the same.
Yeah. Talk about mentors. You know, what role have mentors, you know, whether it's, you know, digital mentors, we've shared a lot of books here. We talked about the importance of podcast and always having kind of your ear in into something. Have you had personal mentors and coaches kind of along this way? I mean, I know you shared that you do some personally coaching and mentoring now. So what role has mentors or coaches played in your development as a business and as, you know, as an entrepreneur?
So this is something I struggle with, because I think like a lot of times new business owners will, like, the first thing they need to do is go get a mentor, and like that'll put them on, you know? And it's like, I don't know about that. Yeah, mentors are good, but a lot of times they just happen organically, just through the day to day, like doing stuff and getting stuff done. So step one, I think, is just go to work. Like I said earlier, turn your living room into a classroom, turn your car into a mobile classroom. I have 100 mentors, but they've never met me. They're on YouTube. They're on podcasts. Like, there's a dude, his name's Casey Winters, who was the first person that Grubhub ever hired to help them grow their business. And then Pinterest then hired him. And he's the guy why Grubhub and Pinterest are what they are, because he's the guy who figured out how to grow these businesses. I've never met this dude, but he's like doing talks all the time. He's like giving like keynotes. He's giving presentations. He's doing interviews, talking about how he did that. And that's a mentor of mine who I've never met, that I've learned a lot from over the last 10 years on how to execute at GreenPal, how we grow the marketplace GreenPal. So step one is, don't just think you got to hit somebody up on LinkedIn that lives in your area who's worth $10 million and say, I want to pick your brain. Like, don't do that. Actually do some stuff, get a business going. And then like, if mentors like bubble up out of the course of that, that's great. But like, the mentors you probably really want to like follow are the ones that don't have time to sit down with you because they're like executing at such a high level. But like, learn read every blog post they've ever written, every interview they've ever done, and learn that way passively, which you can do these days, is what's worked for me. And is what I would recommend. The other thing is too, is no matter like what you do as it relates to mentorship, like Mark Cuban said, never take advice or guidance from somebody who hasn't done or isn't already doing what it is you're trying to do. So a lot of times, you know, like, you know, you get on Instagram, you got all these like fugazi life coaches and business coaches, and they've never done anything. And it's like, why are you going to take advice from somebody, you know, that's never done anything? Like Warren Buffett said, Wall Street's the only place where people will drive up in a Rolls Royce and take advice from somebody who drives a Honda. It's like, it makes no sense. Like,
I'm so in agreement with you. It's like, you got this 23-year-old life coach. It's like, dude, you don't even have a life. Like, what are you gonna coach me on? Like, you're 1 year out of college. Like, you know, you're still, you know, still picking up the Soho cups from the beer pong tournament last night. Come on now. But I get it. I agree. Probably one of the greatest mentors is failing. Try and fail. And then the mentor is the experience of having to figure out the solution for what I just wasn't able to do. And I can't tell you, how many mentors along the way, through multiple jobs. And it was kind of the same thing with you. You talked about getting into these neighborhoods where you were cutting the grass, you got around the proximity with the right type of people. And whether they knew it or not, they became a type of mentor for you. Maybe it wasn't a conversation, but maybe it was just seeing like how this guy, his morning routine, how does he, walk to the car or what is he doing when he gets home at night? How's he, spending time with his kids after a long day? Just kind of these picking up through the proximity of being around the right people. But yeah, don't get caught up. I feel so many people, especially in today's world with digital social media, you have so many courses and events and seminars and people, they attend these things because they're getting this dopamine hit. Like they're doing something. Like if I go to an event, like I'm doing something, I'm a business owner, but you spend a grand on 2 days in a weekend, but then you return home and then you don't do anything. You don't execute upon it. So I think it comes down to
I call it fake work. Fake work is all of that BS that is not driving any of the metrics you're trying to drive in the business. And it could just be, I need 100 customers. I'm just getting started. Well, pass out some flyers or make some cold calls or grind out some cold emails, the inputs that get to those 100 customers. That's what you need to be doing. And if you want to go to a conference once a year and meet some people that are at a high level, that's fine. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But that's not the thing that's going to make you successful. It's the grind, it's the slog, the early days of like holding yourself accountable to achieve the small goals that are inching you towards where you're trying to get. That's what makes you successful.
Yeah, that's Mark Cuban. You mentioned Mark calls that the wantrepreneur versus entrepreneur. Like they want so bad to experience what it feels like, but whatever it is, it's the lack of belief or confidence or just the discipline and work ethic to actually get out and go do the things. I mean, you talked about you built your first business with printed flyers on a piece of paper from a Word doc. I built a six-figure coaching business in the online space, coaching online without a website. I can't tell you how many people in the first couple of months were like, oh, just send me your website, for the information. I was like, I don't have one. Like, you have a business without a website? Website doesn't pay any money. Like, me coaching my clients.
I'm here.
Exactly. Exactly. So, brother, I want to be super respectful of your time here. I know you busy man. So, we have one final question we wrap up every single episode with. But before we do that, Brian, where can people, listeners, if they want to learn more about Green Pal or if they want to connect with you socially, just to hear more? I know you're putting a lot of content out there with the podcast and everything that you've been going on. So we're hanging out these days online. Where can people connect with you if they want to learn more about Green Pal and this yourself and what you have going on personally?
Yeah, anybody listening to this doesn't want to waste time mowing your own yard. You can just download Green Pal in the App Store or the Play Store, get hooked up with a good lawn mowing service in less than a minute. And then anybody wants to reach out to me, I hang out on Instagram more than anywhere. So Brian M. Clayton, just drop me a follow and a DM there.
All right, incredible. And yeah, once again, guys, we'll get all that information plugged down here in the show notes. So Brian, last question. We end every single episode with this. Obviously, the title of the show is The Superhuman Life. I shared with you before we started recording the type of work that I'm doing, with helping men struggling with porn. So the podcast for me, I started this, almost 2 years now. And it was a result of really my own kind of personal transformation. I had a background in fitness and bodybuilding. I'd been a fitness coach and competitive athlete for about a decade plus. But I went through a radical transformation in my life. I mean, finding my faith, kind of really taking a deeper look at, who I was, what I was doing. And I really had to work through, some of my own personal demons. And in that process, I came to the conclusion that, I believe that we were all put on this earth for a very specific purpose. You talked about your purpose being, building these businesses. So I have a belief that we're all given a purpose here in this world. And then we're given this body. So this one vessel to really experience and live out this purpose. And it's our job to identify that purpose and then fully embrace and harness this physical body that we have through fitness, mindset, et cetera. So when I talk about living a superhuman life, for me, Brian, it's more of a belief system that attaching your purpose to your work ethic and really embracing your physical body. So for me, that's kind of the belief system of living a superhuman life. But I like to get the guest take every single time as we end the show. So I know it's a little off topic. We're talking about business and building Green Pound, et cetera. But Brian Clayton, as we wrap up here today, how would you define living a superhuman life?
Living a superhuman life for me is looking back every 3 or 4 or 5 years and being a completely new person, a completely evolved person. I think there's a Japanese proverb where they say, if a man goes away for 2 weeks and comes back, you should not be able to recognize who he is because he's grown so much. And so I think if you're constantly moving forward, you're constantly learning new things, you're constantly being humbled, you're acquiring new wisdom, you should like progress and evolve and complete and be a completely transformed person every 3, 4, 5 years. If you're not, you're not really pushing yourself hard enough. And for me, it's not like I'm some David Goggins type where I'm just like, get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go run 20 miles. I'm not that motivated. The business is the thing that causes me to get in there and do those hard things. It's the forcing function. And inside of the business, there's always little tripwires that I trip over that if I'm not prepared, that is this, like, I have to do the things to be prepared. So like that to me is like living a superhuman life is like, wow, damn, I was talking like that 3 years ago or I was thinking like that 10 years ago. Wow. Look how far I've come. And the business for me is the vehicle for that. The business is the vehicle to cause me to level up, to live a prosperous life. That's what I love about business.
No, absolutely love that. And that's what I love about creating content. You know, I now have a backlog of conversations that I've been having for the last 2 years, and I have no plan to end this anytime. I can go back and listen to what was I interested in, because I asked the questions that are intriguing to me. So guys, you heard it here. Are you the same person today that you were yesterday? What are you doing in your life right now to elevate, to level up, to step into that next version of yourself? Because you should not be the same person a month from now, 3 months from now, and especially a year, 3, 5 years from now. So you're to hear from Brian. Guys, we appreciate you for tuning in. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit that subscribe button. Also, let us know what you took out of today's conversation. What was meaningful? What was valuable to you? Drop us down there in the comment. For you guys listening on the audio side, whether it's Apple, Spotify, podcast, make sure to hit subscribe. Also, most important, if somebody in your life needs to hear this conversation, do us this favor, do us this blessing, and share this conversation with them. But for Frank Rich, Brian Clayton, level up, step into the next version of yourself. We'll see you guys on the other side.